Welcome to Mates and Dates, a podcast for young people by young people. We're a team of five from across Sydney, and we'll be talking about the experiences of young people becoming independent and building and maintaining healthy relationships. Before we start, we'd like to acknowledge that this podcast has been recorded on Cammeraygal land, and we extend this acknowledgement to wherever you may be listening to this podcast from. I'm your host, Ed, and today I'm joined by Donna.
Hey.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. I'm excited for today's episode because I don't reckon we speak about today's topic enough. I'm a high school teacher of teenage boys as well, and I can see the need to delve into these topics because boys are genuinely curious about this stuff, but you can tell they just want that space to chat about it.
Well, I'm not jealous of you teaching high school boys, but yeah, I agree. I'm really excited for today's episode as well. It's probably the topic in the series closest to me. Just in my experience, I've noticed that me and my circle of guy friends in particular struggle to have any sort of meaningful conversations. But don't worry, if you're one of my friends, I'm not talking directly about you. Or maybe I am, watch out.
Yes.
But I definitely know this is an issue for men of all ages. This struggle isn't because men don't care about each other. Sometimes it can be because we don't have the language to unpack our feelings, or because society doesn't always hold space for men and their emotions.
Totally. And to break it all down, we're joined by Al Green from The Man Cave to talk about men's mental health and some of the reasons behind why men struggle to open up with mates or partners. Al's worked with 40,000 young men to address this very issue. He's an advocate for facilitating healthy masculinity for boys and young men.
Welcome, Al.
So the Man Cave is a preventative ill mental health organization for boys in high school. There's a lot of amazing cure-based initiatives out there and crisis intervention services. But for us, we believe that so much of that is preventable by investing in the next generation of boys to ideally equip them with the skills of emotional intelligence and literacy, self-awareness and connection to others so that they don't ever need to meet any of those other services.
I think that's so great. It's that real life skill component to it that school kind of misses out when you're trying to meet curriculum targets and things like that. I guess that leads me to ask you, has there been anything that surprised you from speaking to young men?
The thing that surprises, well, it doesn't surprise me anymore, but it surprises other people when I tell them, is that boys want to be talking about this stuff. In fact, they're desperate to be talking about how they're feeling, and they're desperate to be able to connect to their mates on another level. It's just they don't get the opportunities to, you know. Something that a reflection that we make often is, you know, it's not that they don't want it or they don't have things going on. It's just they either have never been given the space where it's been safe enough to do so, or they've literally never seen it. They've never seen a male role model older than them open up in just different ways.
Yeah.
And the third one, which we really notice, is that the emotional literacy piece is that sometimes they just actually don't know how to talk about how they feel. Yeah. Sometimes in workshops, boys, you know, we have an exercise called a check-in where in the middle of the day, we give them the opportunity to be able to, for a couple of minutes uninterrupted, just talk about how they feel. And a typical workshop can sometimes go, school's good, footy's good, checked in. And that might be true. School might be good and footy might be good, and that might be exactly how they're feeling. But for us, it's like, okay, let's expand that. Let's give some more language.
Yeah, let's break it down.
The internal human experience is a complicated one, and it's a hard thing to navigate, and language never quite does it justice. And so for us, we just want to intervene at an earlier age to be able to give boys some more language to be able to talk about how they're feeling, because then if they can do that at a later age, they're going to be able to use their words rather than their fists or suppressing.
Yeah. And emotional intelligence is, like, I like to describe it as a muscle that needs to be trained. Like, it's something that the first couple of times is really difficult, and then over time you feel more comfortable, and then, as you say, your vocabulary improves and you can start to really articulate. I guess the culture around men and masculinity is really influential on why that is. So I'm wondering if you could describe sort of what the current ideas of masculinity, or maybe what the boys are telling you, what they think it means to be masculine.
Yeah. So there's an exercise that we run in our workshop called Good Man versus Real Man. We start to ask boys, what does it mean to be like a real man? You know, when you think about a stereotypical man, what are the things that you think of? And so much of the time they talk about, you know, it's all the things that we would imagine and a lot of things that we would maybe attribute to what, you know, we can dub as toxic masculinity, which we think is a complex word that gets a bad run a lot of the time, or it just kind of gets pulled into it being all masculinity. I think that's one of the things that boys are growing up really confused about is that, yeah, they believe that they're toxic because they're masculine. It's an interesting dance for them to go, okay, well, how do I be proud about being a man when the rest of the world tells me that what I'm doing is wrong or that I'm toxic? And so part of our workshop is about breaking that down. And so in this stereotypical man, they often talk about being strong, bottling up your feelings, not showing people that you cry, you know, hooking up with lots of girls, drinking heaps, partying, all those things. But then the flip of that is we ask, well, what does it mean to be a good man? And who are some of the men that you really look up to and you really appreciate their values? And, you know, it's the most amazing things come out, you know, honest, kind, caring, supportive, open, loving. Boys really want to be good men. They just don't know how. And I think that's a huge point to what you've said, Ed, is it's like it's getting really confusing. It's in some that there's still this archaic perception of what a stereotypical man was that may have been relevant 50 years ago and is still very much in our society everywhere we look, from our political structures down to everyday interactions. And yeah, you know, there's now this kind of new age man wave that's coming through, which is no, talk about how you're feeling and be emotional and be all these things. So it's like boys are caught between these two realities. They really don't have guidance. And so we have a lot of lost boys growing up to be hurt men.
I can only imagine like how isolating that would feel, as you said, when you're caught between two different worlds. And it's, I guess, about bridging that gap and trying to understand how can we balance both of those things. How do you think it affects the relationship that guys have with each other then? Like we talked about the relationship they sort of have with themselves in relation to society and societal expectations, but in terms of how they interact with each other, how do you think that that would be impacted?
Boys just posture off each other. Mm-hmm. And it's so a pack mentality, and the school system really forces us into that reality. You know, we only need to look at the kind of behaviors that are rewarded in the world to see how a young person might grow up, especially a boy. You start looking at, well, if you look at our political leaders and, you know, even some of our sports heroes and celebrities, and you look at how they interact and behave with each other. And it's like boys are soaking all that up and they're bringing that into their relationships with each other. And so I think the big thing that we notice is not many boys are just, they feel like they can be comfortable being their true selves. It's like they don't want to gamble the risk and the loss that it would take to potentially lose this small amount of connection they get from being this different version or this diluted part of themselves. They don't want to gamble that small amount of connection that they might get there to realize the massive payoff that you get when you're fully authentically connected with somebody. Mm. You just don't know until you have that relationship with somebody how good it can be and how good it can feel just being totally yourself with other people. Mm. And so I think that really just starts to tumble into relationships with boys where they just accept where they're at because they just don't know any differently. I have a huge amount of faith in this next generation. This generation coming through is the most socially conscious generation that we have ever had in humanity. And I just think we need to be supporting them to get out of their way.
Yeah, well said. I find it interesting in my experience of growing up, like that super isolating feeling of not connecting. So you don't feel like you're part of a deep connection with anyone, but then also just internally you're dealing with so many insecurities and sort of battles with online social media, like porn, social expectations. Men are now hyper aware of their bodies, you know, how strong they're meant to be, their sexual performance, whether they have a receding hairline, how much they can grow a beard. Like it's all these sort of artificial expectations. So we're just struggling to get that deeper level and talk about it. And then you realize that your human experience is universal. Most under 24 year olds have the same experience and same expectations and insecurities. I think empathy is something that I see a lack maybe of in young men, the ability to anticipate or expect how other people may be feeling.
in curriculum, it's so cure based, or there's just I think you make a really good point, Ed, that there's like an expectation that people are empathetic, but actually exactly what you said around emotional intelligence, empathy is a tool that needs to be practiced and it needs to be identified when it's present, because I think sometimes young people don't necessarily know what it means. They might feel it, but they can't identify what it is. And yeah, I think it's something that gets cast to being a feminine trait and therefore shirks boys of the responsibility of needing to have it, that it doesn't feel like an important quality for boys to have. But my ability to empathize is 100% my strongest quality. You know, if I stripped away all my other qualities and I was only left with empathy, I would want to take that. I'd be happy with that. And I think often there's just not an opportunity for boys to empathize beneath the surface. And so when we do the check-ins in our workshops, you know, we often have one of three realizations from boys after the group has checked in. One is, it was so good to get that off my chest. I've been carrying that for a long time and now I feel relief. And that just feels awesome. You know, we talk about this metaphor of a backpack in our workshops with rocks in it. And sometimes we just don't know how heavy each other's backpacks are until we can start to feel safe enough to open them and take rocks out. The second is, I didn't know that you were going through that. I'm going through the same thing too. So I understand you better now and I feel more connected to you. And that's really where the empathy piece comes in, where a young person can recognize in another, we have the same experience. How good is that? We now instantly have a deeper level that we connect on beyond the banter. Mm. The third one is, I didn't know you were going through that. I now understand your behavior way better. So when a young person comes to school and they might be angry or playing up or really quiet, to understand the story that so often that young person is going through a challenging home life experience just breeds empathy with a group.
It just made me think what you were saying about empathy is if we don't practice sort of empathizing with others, especially young men, I feel that it would be hard to sort of empathize with yourself. So then, you know, if you're going through any sort of internal conflict, I feel like you're more likely to sort of push that down and not deal with it and then exercise those muscles, like Ed said, about emotional intelligence. And so empathy kind of is multi-directional in that way. Once you can open up that conversation and empathize with someone else, you're more likely to be a bit more forgiving with yourself and your own issues. And I think, like, speaking from a women's perspective, you're right. Like, we have more of sort of a place to go and vent, and it's not seen as something to be criticized about. Whereas men clearly need that, but the only thing, what I'm getting is the only thing that's stopping them is just the fact that it's not normalized. So I totally agree with what you're saying.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. And it's, you know, men and boys just have a real opportunity to learn so powerfully from women in this situation. Empathy and cultivating empathy in this next generation is really one of the most powerful skills that we can impart.
I completely agree. Like, personally, this year's been pretty tough, obviously with lockdown and everything, but also my dad got quite sick early in the year and underwent quite extensive chemo. And, you know, I reached out to my group of guy mates and I feel quite lucky because I know my friends are sensitive and supportive, but there were times where they just forgot to reach out or ask follow-up questions beyond, like, such as how's the family, how's your dad, how are you, that those kind of questions. And after thinking about it, none of my friends have experienced anything similar. And so, yeah, it made me think about whether it was a lack of empathy or a lack of awareness of how other people may be feeling if they can't personally relate. So you speak about this sort of and the inability to cross those bridges. How would you sort of recommend people can implement that into their life, start building those blocks and start building up their empathy?
Yeah. Sorry to hear about your dad, man.
It's all right. Yeah. It's really, yeah, it was tough, really tough at times, but we're sort of on the other side now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to ask you a question, like what would you have liked from your mates during that you didn't feel like you got?
There were definitely like individuals who were really good. And it definitely took time. The first couple months, there wasn't a lot of questions asked, but then, yeah, it's just sort of when you catch up, it's the wanting to know the update and asking how you are. And then I also found that by me opening it up to him, he then, my good mate, really started doing the same and telling me his, what he's going through. And so it wasn't just a selfish individual transaction. It started where we're now closer than ever because we're very comfortable opening up with each other. So I, and I guess it just would have been, it's, I just found it interesting. It didn't, it wasn't holistic as in the whole group didn't do it. It was sort of individuals, which I think is interesting based off, maybe it's sort of, some people are naturally quite good at it and others really need to train that muscle and get stronger at it.
Yeah, totally, man. And like amazing, you know, how good is it when a mate reaches out and asks more follow-up questions, you know, and feels, I think just what so many things that I heard in what you just said then is, yeah, there's at some point there's just going to be a leap of faith that needs to be made with mates that you feel like you can trust, and you made that leap of faith with one of your mates. And when you do that, yeah, it's not always, it's a leap of faith because you don't necessarily know where you're going to land. And it's like, you may share something and your mate may just have no idea how to hold that, and to not make that about you, you know, and not make it about, oh, this person doesn't care about how I'm feeling, or this person doesn't get me. It just literally, they might just have never been in a conversation like that before. And so, as you said, for some people, you know, some people have had, some of the most empathetic young people that I've ever met have had the hardest life in the world. And so they can naturally understand the challenges that other people face. And for some people, for me, for a lot of my life until I was, you know, in my early 20s, I had what I would describe as like a free ride in terms of really like actual challenging situations. And so for me, if I had mates that were going through things in school, I just wouldn't have really known how to connect with them. And so I think there's just a point where there's going to be parts of you that tell you not to have that conversation, and those, and to recognize that those parts of you are just trying to protect you. In that moment, those parts are just trying to say, if you say this thing and someone has a bad response to you, it's still kind of like this outdated programming that we're going to get kicked out of the cave and we're going to get eaten by a lion. But that's just not what risk-taking is anymore. And it's this counterintuitive thing where we really need to work with the different parts of our human experience to be able to flip that narrative that actually speaking is the way to stay in the cave, you know, and it is the way to be able to make sure that we start connecting with one another, because we're as we said, like we're heading down a scary route of polarization. And yeah, it takes a mixture of both sides being able to drop the anger or the inability to see the other's perspective, and to just, for argument's sake, understand where somebody else is at and become curious. You know, I really liked what you said before, Donna, in the, what we see externally is also going to help internally. You know, if we see someone who is really angry in our life and we have no idea how to interact or be with them, well, how do we interact with anger when it comes up inside ourselves? Is that an emotion that we repress? And then what happens when we repress that? And so just starting to see the opportunity that whatever happens in the external world is a real gift to be able to understand the parts of you internally, and to be able to have conversations with them and to be able to understand them better.
And I think that hesitancy, people often say, oh, I didn't want to make you sad, or I didn't they're scared of what the repercussions will be if you bring it up. But actually, as you said, people respond and say, oh, that weight was just lifted off my shoulders. Or, and I think people are hesitant to for the fear of what it might happen to the person that you're asking the questions to. But even if it is sad, being sad but sharing it with someone is just also enough to get that weight off their shoulders.
Yeah, and it's such a masculine perspective to want to fix something. Whereas I chat to some of my female mates who are just like, oh, we're not like solving when we're talking. We're just talking and we're just exploring and we're just holding space for each other. Whereas there's so many times that I think men get together and it's more just like operating in like ones and zeros, like, okay, can I fix this or can I not fix this? If I don't feel like I can fix it, I'm just not even going to open it.
So I think this will then take us to our listener question. Okay, so this is comes from Claire, and she says, hi, my boyfriend and I, who were good friends all throughout high school, faced a big problem about a year into our relationship. We had pushed all our problems under the rug. I'm pretty non-confrontational and he struggles with going deeper into problems and reading emotions. So our discussions seem to always go in circles, focusing on the shallower issues and quick fixes. We're still learning how to go about this. What would be some strategies to work through this?
I'd like to preface this by saying I'm not a psychologist.
Yeah. I think it's more so about him, trying to, as we discussed earlier, reading emotions and being able to articulate and going deeper into issues.
Okay. I would offer our three kind of main tools. The three tools are a check-in, a clearing, and an honoring. So a check-in, which is what I described before, is the ability to imagine like when you do a check-in, when you go to the airport or you go to a hotel and you like show them your bags and you're like, this is what I'm carrying. This is what I have with me today. So that's just an opportunity to start building into like the cadence and rhythm of your relationship, going like, cool, Sunday night, we do check-ins and we just uninterrupted. You're not asked any questions. There's no follow-ups. How are you? Like what's in your space right now? And just allowing that space to go, it could be 90 seconds. You could start really small. And then that might, branch out to 20-minute check-ins where it's just, you just get the opportunity to uninterrupted talk about how you're feeling. Because there's so many times we're in conversations, I know I experienced this, where you've got something great to say or you want to expand on a topic more and someone pulls it in a different direction. And so there's a part of your experience that doesn't get fully expressed because you have to move with someone else. And that's great. That's a part of being in a relationship and connecting with somebody. But then there's this space where it's like, okay, we'll just express everything that's there and let's just see the extent of it and not make any of it wrong or right, but it just is. This is just what you're experiencing right now. And then that's, if there's an opportunity after that, you can ask for permission to ask some more questions. It's another thing that we work with the boys on is permission versus trespass. So a lot of the time, I think some people trespass into each other's personal and emotional space. And we ask, we say, okay, instead of just going, hey, all right, so sorry, stop talking. I've got a question to ask you about that. To be able to say, hey, actually, there was one thing that you said in your check-in about this. Would you be open to me asking you a question about that? And then it's like consent. You're asking consent because then if the person says no, awesome. That's a boundary that both of you can explore for the future. If they say yes, sick. Now you get to ask a question and get to learn more about that particular thing. So check-ins are awesome. The second one is a clearing. Clearings we use in our organization it's based on the term clear the air. And so there's set spaces that we have at the start of each of our meetings where clearings happen. And so that's about being able to say any negative or challenging energy that you have between you and somebody else, that's a space that you can name that thing. So I find a lot of the time, and my partner and I have gotten a lot better at it now, but there's times where it's like things can just get swept under the rug and they bubble when they get swept under the rug and they can start to become toxic and then they can start to become suddenly you're pissed off about something that has nothing to do with what you're actually frustrated about. And then suddenly you can end up in this spiral in a relationship. And so a clearing is a space that you can, same thing, set each week that is, hey, just want to give you an opportunity to be able to say any clearings for each other. You both know what that time is for. You both know what that space is for. And to be able to say, hey, you rocked up, you keep rocking up late. And I feel like that's disrespecting my time. What I want to take responsibility for is naming it in this clearing now. And I'd love to just hear from your perspective, what would you like to take responsibility for? So it becomes this opportunity for this dialogue where you can talk about the impact that someone else's action has had on you and also take responsibility for your part in it. That's like one of the best things ever. And actually is in now like 10 of my mates' share houses because it's just become this like rhythm because, there's so many things that happen in share houses.
Yeah.
This space where there's like a clearing space every week where you can go, cool, if there are any issues, that's the space to do it. And then the final is honorings, which is an opportunity to pick a specific quality or attribute about a person and honor them for that thing. So guys can really fall into the pattern of, oh, you're a good bloke, you're a legend. Yeah, good bloke is the main one that we hear in workshops, especially with boys, and it's very Australian vernacular. But like, what's below that? Like, what makes that person a good bloke? Like, what's the actual quality that you want to pull out of that person? And so in a relationship, that can become really powerful because you can start pinpointing these amazing things that you love about somebody. And then it's like really strength-based feedback. So rather than like working on all the things that are deficits, how can you focus on the things that are really powerful and that you love and that you want to see more of in your relationship? And so that those three are kind of a good cocktail of things for us in terms of being able to, I mean, we kind of call it like conversational or emotional hygiene, you know, and it's just a good place to start in terms of building in more depth. And as you can build those three practices or tools into your life, like I do it with mates. Anytime I see a mate now, we start with a check-in and then there's space for clearing. And then at some point we'll probably do an honoring. So it's just starting to, like, rather than entering the big bad world of fluid, whatever, like the ether of our own unconscious human experience, to be able to just start putting a little bit of just rough structures around it to be able to explore more. Because being human is hard and weird. It is. Totally. It's hard and weird.
I love that.
And so we're just trying to make things a little bit easier.
Amazing.
I hope that gave something.
No,
my God, 100%. Really, are you kidding? I'm going to be going home using all of that.
Yeah, some really valuable skills, like tangible skills to take home.
Thanks so much to Al for joining us for that episode. Both Ed and I are definitely going to use, especially the tools that Al mentioned at the end, the checking, clearing and honoring in our own relationships. They're just such great practical tools. And sometimes we forget to do those things in conversations with the people that are closest to us.
I think it's important to note that this isn't exclusively a male issue. Everyone can try and strengthen their communication skills.
Yeah. I mean, I just have to like look at my own relationship and how I am in my relationship with my partner. I'm definitely the one who is less communicative. And if we get into an argument or a disagreement, I'm the one who's just bursting into tears or just like storming out of the room. And he's the one who's communicating a lot better and being like, look, babe, it's okay. Like, let's talk about this. Like, I can tell that you're upset. We can touch base about it later. And so, yeah, it's definitely not just men who aren't as great at communicating in relationships. Women can also struggle with it, like me.
In my situation, I know my sisters used to get frustrated when I used to shut down and just try and walk out of the room whenever they asked me any sort of question of any difficulty. And my brain still reverts back to that mindset of running away, but I've tried to learn to lean into those situations and stay in the conversation.
So what were the sorts of things that your sisters were asking from you that you felt like you need to leave the room?
It was often really basic questions around how are you? Are you stressed with school? And I would immediately dismiss things and say, yeah, I'm fine, just to sort of get them out of my bedroom. Mm. But it took them to stay in the room, ask again, and then I'll dismiss it and then ask again. And then eventually the ball started to roll. And this is over years of being a teenager. Eventually, I feel like I'm reasonably comfortable, although my mindset's still to run away. That's my instinct. So it definitely was patience on their behalf before I started to sort of increase my skills and be able to sit in an uncomfortable conversation.
And it actually reminds me of what we spoke about with Al in the episode. We were really talking about flexing that muscle in your sisters over the years, imploring you to like keep exploring your feelings. Over time, you were flexing that muscle to the point where you could build on being able to let them know how you feel from I'm fine to actually articulating more of how you feel.
Yeah, and the expectation isn't for everyone who listens to this podcast to turn to your friend and suddenly become an open book and being vulnerable. It's just about starting to incorporate real things, real substance into conversations. And it won't be one long dragged out conversation. It'll probably take a few short talks like it took with my sisters of just sitting there, briefly touching on it and feeling more and more comfortable, testing the waters before you actually start to get somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. It's not going to be like one drawn out therapy session and then all of a sudden we don't talk about it ever again. It's definitely like making it a routine and like a part of your relationships and how you converse with the people close to you using those checkings, clearings and honorings.
Yeah, and just normalizing it. Like obviously with Movember, Are You Okay Day, there's this whole push to try and normalize and destigmatize mental health, but it actually takes conversing with a friend to actually get rid of the stereotypes.
Yeah.
You can talk about normalizing it, but until you talk to a friend about your mental health, that's when the barriers start to come down.
Exactly. So Are You Okay Day is completely like, it's so important, but remembering like, you know, we can ask more often than just a couple of times a year and just making it more of a frequent happening.
We've already heard in other episodes the power of having strong communicative skills and how it affects different aspects of relationships, from setting boundaries to consent. But just on a basic level, being a better communicator and having the ability to articulate how you're feeling will bring you nothing but stronger and healthier relationships with others.
If after listening to this episode, you wanted to explore these topics further but don't necessarily have someone to talk to, or if you're looking for someone else to talk to, Nina's here to run through some organizations and services that can help you out.
Hey everyone. There are a ton of organizations which provide avenues to engage with people if you feel you need extra support beyond friends and family. Waves of Wellness is an 8-week program which gets you into the ocean, learning to surf while teaching mental health strategies. 180 also provides free peer support groups with other young people across Sydney. And finally, Top Blokes is a male-focused organization offering personal development programs for young men. Be sure to check out the show notes for even more organizations and some other great podcasts on men's mental health. This episode of Mason Dates was hosted by Edward Giles and Donna Saramana. Producers are Sarah Sue and Jen Trimstra. Executive producer is Stephanie Aceclave. Additional production and mixing by me, Nina Longfellow. Special thanks to Natalie Patterson, Lily Giles, and of course, Al Green. Check us out on Instagram @MasonDates. Thanks for listening.